This week's guest went from working in the wealth management industry for such companies as Goldman Sachs to running a children's shoe manufacturer to starting his own outdoor apparel company dedicated to supporting the mountain communities in which it does business. I'm Matt Mowry, co-publisher and executive editor of Business NH Magazine and Granite Media Group.
And I'm Christine Kerrigan, co-publisher of Business NH Magazine and chief creative officer for Granite Media Group. And welcome to BizCast NH.
So our guest today, I know we haven't introduced them yet, but is going to be one of our exhibitors at the Made in New Hampshire Expo, which you and our events team have been busy planning.
Yes, we're very excited. It's coming up quick. It's on April 5th, 6th, and 7th. It's that weekend, so very soon. And so I was going to ask you, Matt, since you've been involved with the expo for 20 plus years.
24 years.
Any favorite memories that you have from the Made in New Hampshire Expo?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, when I started, it used to be over in the Armory in Manchester.
Mm-hmm. Up over on Canal Street.
Yes. So, it's been amazing over 24 years to see the number of businesses that have started in New Hampshire and then grown, that start off as a small mom and pop or just a mom or just a pop business. Mm-hmm. And through going to farmers markets and events like ours, start to build a following. And then we see them becoming full grown, small businesses with either a storefront or a manufacturing plant.
Or you'll see their products in Hannaford.
And you start seeing them on the shelves at places. And I get so, it's so nerdy of me, but I nerd out when I'm in a store and I see one of our exhibitors on the shelf and I'm like, I know them!
I do the same thing. I'm like, that's one of our vendors. That's one of our vendors.
And that's what I really love about the show is that it allows you to connect with the people behind the products and really be able to talk to them and ask questions about what's in the product, how they go make it, get their own background. I mean, it is amazing to me for every exhibitor, there is a different story as to why this is their passion, how they got into it, what they hope for it to become. And at the end of the day, what I love about our show is that we're really aimed at exposing a mass market audience to the small businesses in New Hampshire and all the different products that are made here and to be able to support locally made products and keep our money in our local economy.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like the ultimate pop-up shop.
It is. It definitely is. And I mean, just to, give a little plug to the show to the expo as well. I mean, the variety of products that we have available at this show is just, it's amazing. You see some of these things that are made and you're like, I had no idea these things were made in New Hampshire. But I mean, we have things like, we have hot sauce vendors, we have candle makers, we have
cowboy boots here in New Hampshire.
Yes. We've got our beer, wine and spirits that, people love to come and see and buy and sample. We have dog treats. We have authors coming. We have furniture makers. We have clothing makers, which will lead us into our guest that we have today. And it's just so exciting to see all these different products. And you're right, talking to the makers, I think, just really puts that personal touch on it.
It does. And, every year we see some vendors who've been with us for years returning, which is wonderful to see. And then we see a lot of new exhibitors coming in. And it gives, our audience members who, I always love hearing people like, I come every year. I'm like, thank you. That's awesome. And it allows them to have a new experience at an expo that they really like. So they're able to check in with some of their favorites and then discover new ones.
Definitely.
So, well, let's meet one of our exhibitors today and
let's
the wonderful
do.
Business they're growing here in New Hampshire.
Our guest this week is Rudy Glocker, founder of Burgeon Outdoor in Lincoln. In college, Rudy found himself drawn to the world of business and worked for organizations including Credit Suisse and Goldman Sachs. In 2008, he joined Petey Ped Footwear, a children's footwear designer and manufacturer, as COO, and then served as its managing partner. Glocker led sales and distribution for the company, as well as its retail rollout in China. Rudy sold his ownership in PD Ped in June 2017 and went on to serve as president of Iliac Golf, a golf apparel company located in Carlsbad, California. During his tenure, Rudy initiated the transition of the company from a wholesale to direct-to-consumer focus. He founded Burgeon Outdoor in 2019, an outdoor sports apparel company aimed at hikers, skiers, and others in need of lightweight, breathable, and rugged gear. The company has grown revenue annually by 35% and is focused on being a company with a purpose. The organization supports several nonprofits, including local ski and racing teams around New England. Rudy currently serves as president of Granite Outdoor Alliance. He is a trustee emeriti of the Aloha Foundation, where he served as treasurer for 4 years and chaired the audit committee for 5 years. Rudy, quite a resume. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Christine. Thank you, Matt. Really happy to be here today and appreciate having a chance to join your show.
Well, we're excited to talk to you to learn about your company.
So let's start there, and then we're going to go in the Wayback Machine because okay. It's such an interesting journey you got to starting an outdoor apparel company in the White Mountains. So let's start with, what is Burgeon Outdoors? Why call it Burgeon? And what do you do?
Sure. So Burgeon Outdoor was founded with the mission of creating a better tomorrow for mountain communities such as Lincoln and Gorham, New Hampshire, where we're based. So that's the overall reason why we exist. After that, you know, we like to talk about it, Burgeon, our mission. So that is our mission. That is what we're trying to do. And then we really like to talk about the how. So how do we do that? So we make our products in both Lincoln and Gorham, New Hampshire. We work with local profits and local nonprofits and organizations. So actually 5% of our sales goes to support those efforts. It also includes things like trail maintenance, because that's an important thing in the White Mountains, because there's a lot of trails and a lot of hikers. But we're really content on giving back to our community economically, providing jobs, environmentally, by using friendly manufacturing processes, sustainable materials, dead stock material, which we could go into, and then also improving the social fabric of our communities, which is why we do many things with nonprofits or other organizations in the White Mountains. And then what we actually do, so the product you actually come in and buy, is outdoor apparel. We make everything from base layers to windproof, waterproof jackets. And what I'd say about it is we don't only make things in New Hampshire, we make excellent things in New Hampshire. Our Flume base layer has been named the overall best hiking shirt, not once but twice, by Field & Stream. Our products get great reviews and are very popular, not only here in New England, but across the country.
And you were founded in 2019?
That is correct.
So short amount of time that you've accomplished all that. And as we'll talk about, a pandemic happening in between all that.
Yes.
So let's first go back. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're all about the entrepreneurial journey. So can you talk about what you were like growing up and when you were going to college, what you thought you were going to go in for? And how you came out.
Yeah. So if I go back to college, I was a political science major because I thought at some point in time I was going to go to law school. So that was kind of at least the thought process.
And was there like some, what was initially kind of had you thinking that way?
I think it goes back to my childhood. My father was a real estate broker. He had his own business. So I grew up in an entrepreneurial household. So if you kind of think about some of this, I had been exposed to a lot of law in my life, meaning not like in a bad way, but in a good way, meaning like I always found the questions very interesting. So if you go back when I was growing up in the 80s, you know, I was always a consumer of news and would watch like the nightly news with my parents and things like that. So you would hear about Supreme Court cases. And I found it fascinating how people would argue over the minutia of things that to the average person didn't really seem to be that different. But I found it interesting and very intellectual. So I enjoyed it. But as I went through school, I didn't really want to spend the rest of my life arguing over the meanings of certain words or interpreting texts from 200 years ago. That didn't seem to be, you know, how I wanted to do it. No offense to anyone who does, but that's not where I really wanted to, quote unquote, make my impact in life. And so that is what kind of had me looking another term into business. And that's when I went to work on Wall Street for about 12 years for two different companies.
So what attracted you to the world of Wall Street and wanting to delve into that as a way to make an impact? And, you know, what was it that attracted to you?
Well, I think, again, if you go back again to my childhood before I made that decision in school, so I was always a competitive athlete when I was a child. And through my young adulthood, I ended up playing football at Penn State and being a letterman on the football team there. And so I was always very competitive, and there were a couple of things. So one was, I was looking at laws like trial lawyer, right? Very competitive.
Right.
Or go work on Wall Street, very competitive, right? And there's a lot of ex-athletes in those business, a lot of people who, you know, spend a lot of time and effort trying to do things. And if you look at trial lawyers, that's a really tough life. I didn't really want to do that. And again, it brought me back to the Wall Street side of things, where I worked in sales, and sales on Wall Street's a very competitive industry. You're always looking for an advantage. You're trying to talk about why a product is unique and different to what everyone else is having in the marketplace. And I was drawn to that. And it was also one of the jobs out there that had a serious amount of intellectual firepower as you're trying to think about it and you're trying to structure products and create solutions for people. So I found it very interesting and fulfilling.
What were the most valuable lessons, whether what to do or not to do, but what were some of the most valuable lessons you drew from that experience that maybe helped carry you forward?
Yeah, if I go back to being an athlete, I can talk about that from an experience standpoint. Yeah. I think one of the things that's really good about being an athlete, but the same is true if you're a musician, it's not just athletes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're a musician or something like that, you know, and musicians might even be a better, but, you know, we would play a game on Saturday, we would spend 40 hours getting ready for it. Right. So preparation, understanding what's happening, trying to understand, you know, your opposition, trying to understand where you have strengths and weaknesses and what are they going to do, and kind of working through that and really preparing yourself, I found to be an incredible experience. I use it to this day. You know, if you're going to think about it, if we're going to go meet with a potential customer or something like that, you know, what do they do? What do they care about? What have they done? That preparation, I think, is really important. Very few times in life, you know, I'm trying to remember, it was like Clausewitz. I can't remember. One of the famous guys, like, you know, no battle plan survives first engagement with the enemy, right? I think the same is true in business. Like, if you go into a meeting, very rarely does it go just how you thought it was going to go. But at the same time, that preparation allows you to adapt to the challenges that come up and then overcome. And I think that's a really important skill set that I learned. Again, from being a competitive athlete, the same would be for, you know, a concert pianist who probably practices, I don't know, 1,000 hours for a 1-hour performance. But I think that skill set is something that has served me well over time.
So after working on Wall Street, you became you joined PDPED. And can you talk a little bit about what that transition was going? Because they seem like they would be two completely different areas of focus.
Fascinating how you
so
go
what
from,
takes you from
Wall
one to the
Street
other.
To children's shoe manufacturing. What made you do that?
Yeah. So, you know, if I go back to that, so I had mentioned I was a competitive athlete, so I would go back to a Penn State football game with friends every year. So we'd go back, make the trip. And the football coach that I played for is a gentleman by the name of Joe Paterno, and he was very quotable. He had tons of great quotes, but one of the quotes he had was, deep down inside, you have to believe you were destined to do great things. And that was on the back of a t-shirt of a woman who sat in front of me when we went back to one of these games, and Penn State beat Notre Dame that day. It was a good football game for Penn State. It wasn't that great of a game. But we were very happy with the outcome, no complaints. But this woman was standing up in front of me and jumping up and down. I just kept seeing this, you know, deep down inside, you have to believe you were destined to do something great, just over and over again. And I went back on my desk at Goldman Sachs, and I sat there and I said, you know, nothing great's ever going to happen here. It's just not. And it doesn't mean that working at Goldman Sachs wasn't a great experience. It's nothing against Goldman. It's just that for what I wanted to do in life, that was not going to be the definition of something great. A former colleague of mine, he and his wife, Brian and Angela Edgeworth, had started PDPED Footwear. It was a very small company when I joined. But I thought that was the opportunity to go create a global brand. And that to me was really exciting. And so that is what got me into that job.
So where was that company at the time that you joined it? And what was the vision of where to take it?
So the company at that point in time was going through an inflection point in its growth. So they started out making basically just shoes for infants, basically only for kids 0 to 2 years old. And at that point in time, they were getting into making shoes for kids from 0 to 2, but also up to about 6 years old. And so at that's the point in time when I joined the company. So it had been a very good company, right? But it was about to go through a growth phase, and they needed more management experience and sales experience, which was what I was brought on to do originally. And so that is where I joined the company at an inflection point. And then from that point in time, over the next several years, we were able to, I'd have to go back and do the math, I think quadruple the size of the company. if I remember correctly.
And what was critical to doing that?
What was critical, you know, businesses, it's kind of like all the same. Like, you know, I'm not trying to minimize anybody. Like, do we have the right people who have the right capabilities to do the things we need to do to execute against our strategic plan, right? So do we have a strategic plan where we can grow this business for us that was understand the manufacturing side, understanding the sales side, who are the target people we're going after, growing our own direct-to-consumer business? And then do we have the people to actually make those things happen? And I always find in every business experience I've had, I mean, it's the oldest thing in the world. It's the people who make the difference, but it's really true. When you have great people, it allows you to do things that other people cannot do.
And we'll be right back. Are you looking for quality networking in a fun environment? Join Business NH Magazine for the return of the ultimate Biz NH Bash at the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center in Concord on March 28th. Meet leaders from New Hampshire's 2023 Top 100 Private Companies, Top Women-Led Businesses, Top Family-Owned Businesses, and New Hampshire's Startup Stars, plus the 40 influential leaders in New Hampshire as featured in the January issue of Business NH Magazine. Enjoy delicious appetizers and cocktails, explore museum exhibits, take fun photos in our photo booth, and mingle with the stars of New Hampshire business while gazing at the stars. For more information, visit businessnhmagazine.com/events. Sponsored by Merchants Fleet, Northeast Delta Dental, Unitil, Ledyard Bank, Eversource, and UHY Advisors. Buy local at the 27th Annual Made in New Hampshire Try It and Buy It Expo on April 5th, 6th, and 7th at the DoubleTree by Hilton Expo Center in downtown Manchester. Browse a dazzling array of locally made products and sample tons of tasty treats. Purchase fine jewelry, clothing and accessories, bath and body products, handcrafted items for the home, one-of-a-kind art pieces, and more. And you'll be supporting local businesses. And don't forget to say hello to all the rescue animals at Live and Let Live Farm. Swing by the libation station to sample and buy wine, beer, mead, and spirits all made in the Granite State. So bring the entire family to the Made in New Hampshire Try It and Buy It Expo at the DoubleTree by Hilton Expo Center on April 5th, 6th, and 7th. You won't believe what's made in New Hampshire. For more information or to apply to be a vendor, visit madeinnhexpo.com. Sponsored by Northeast Delta Dental and Business NH Magazine. And we're back.
So we were just talking about the growth of the previous company that you had joined that was a manufacturer of children's shoes and accessories. I mean, that's a competitive field. I mean, any sort of apparel, there's lots of choices out there, and any of those fields are going to be dominated by a few big players. And yet you and the team were able to quadruple the size of it, go into global markets. What were some of the challenges you overcame, and what were some of the key lessons that you brought to bear that allowed that company to grow the way it did?
I think part of, you know, I think most entrepreneurs would tell you that, you know, the business you turn away is as important as the business that you take. And I think really trying to understand where our products would work well. So there's certain areas. We actually manufactured our shoes in China at that point in time, or we did the whole time, excuse me. But we actually had a person who was very good at opening retail stores in China who I ended up managing for a period of time. But that gave us an avenue to attack that end market. And actually, I think it was 15 retail locations in China. And so, but it was having that person who understood that and then giving them the tools they needed to be successful. But if we hadn't found that person, it would have been a tough thing to do. Right. So again, it gets back to the people. But that was an opportunity that we saw. And that part of that was by being there. We had our own manufacturing facility. We actually had our own factory. So that's how we met this individual. Part of it was when we went to trade shows, was trying to understand what was, you know, quote unquote, good business and bad business. And then how do you price it effectively so that you actually can make the margins you need to make to support it and do the things you do. And, you know, part of it too is I think one of the most important things and something we're very focused on at Virgin as well is what is your brand and what does it stand for, right? Because at the end of the day, that's really what you're selling. You know, manufacturing of shoes and things like that, you know, that can be done. There are, I mean, literally billions of pairs of shoes produced every year. So the question is, how does your brand differentiate it? What does your brand mean? What does it mean to the consumer? What does it mean to your customer? And how do you make sure that everything you're doing is supporting that story and then finding the places that want to be part of that story?
So after PedPed, you moved on to become the president of Iliad Golf, which was a golf apparel company we mentioned earlier. Can you talk a little bit about what that transition was like and what your role was mainly at Iliad?
At Iliad, it was a job that I had for a brief period of time, but I was brought in. There was an investor who had looked at buying the business who didn't, who then put me in touch with the current owner of the business and said, you know, I've worked with Rudy for, you know, 6-7 months on a couple of different things. I think he'd be very advantageous to your business. And so I was brought in a little bit as a short-term type person. But what I really did there was look at the product systems and how they were running their business and then repositioned it to be more of a direct-to-consumer model. When I went to Iliac at that point in time, there were a bunch of different things on the manufacturing side that were causing problems, but one of the big things was is they were losing direct-to-consumer sales, which are higher margin than wholesale sales, because their manufacturing was so far behind and they always wanted to fulfill their wholesale orders. And so again, it gets back to what type of business do you want on the wholesale side? You know, who can you work with? Who are the key partners for you? As opposed to trying to go after every partner in the world and doing something. And then really making sure the business was sized. So that's what I did when I was at Iliad.
And what prompted the transition between the children's shoe manufacturer and that?
Right. So I am a couple different things. So one is I got married and I was about to have a child. So my wife and I were kind of thinking, like, how do we want to rearrange our work-life balance? Yep. So that's an important thing to do. And also at PedPed, as the business had grown over time, I was still very much in the world of where I really wanted this to become a global brand and become an even bigger company than it was. And my business partners and I think were just at different stages of our different life journeys. You know, their kids were getting older. There's just different things going on. And they had a different vision for the business. And we talked about it. I mean, I don't know how many times, like dozens of times, if not more. And basically, that's when I sold my stake in the business back to them because they had a different vision for the business. I was also going through a life transition, and I said, you know what, it's probably just best. And, you know, we remained friends to this very day. So it was all very amicable. But I think we just got to the point where at a certain point in time, we had different visions for the business. We had different things going on for our lives, in our lives. And so it was a natural, for lack of a better term, transition time.
And there was a lot of transition that happened in what appeared to be a short amount of time. So, I mean, you sell your stake in business, you get connected with the golf apparel company, you're there for a short amount of time. And then what happens that then you start going, I'm just going to start my own company?
So all of those, there's different things in all of those that kind of, you know, get you to the point where at some point in time, I think if you're an entrepreneur, you have a vision that you want to execute in your vision. So when I was at PedPed, I had two business partners. And while we agreed on, you know, probably 85% of the things that happened to the company, there was 15% we didn't disagree on. we did not agree on. And so from that standpoint, you're like, geez, I really wish we had done that. And so you start to say, you know, that's what I would have done. And so you're saying, okay, well, that's what I want to do. But when you're dealing with business partners, you know, that doesn't always happen. So I said, you know, I really want to run my own show. At Iliac, there was a little bit of an opportunity to potentially do that depending on a couple of different things that did not work out. And so at that point in time, that's when I left the company because there was, you know, there was a potential opportunity. They were going to go through recapitalization and do some different things. And depending on how that worked, that might have been an opportunity for me. But it turned out that opportunity did not happen. And so as I came back, you know, I'm, you know, in New Hampshire, I'm thinking to myself, like, what do I really want to do? And I'd always had the idea for creating an outdoor apparel brand in New Hampshire. Basically, I'd been spending so much time in the White Mountains, I mean, ever since I was a little kid. And one of the neat things about it is that it's such a great outdoor community. And, you know, hardly anything is made in New Hampshire from an apparel standpoint. There are some, you know, niche brands of us, you know, you could consider us one. But I was like, you know, if I can connect the love of place that people have for this with a mission to improve this area economically, environmentally, and socially, and you take on the tradition of New England and apparel manufacturing, you're like, you know, which vestiges are still around, it became my idea for how I could execute on that.
And so you had experience working in children's accessory apparel and then a brief stint with sporting goods. So when you're looking at, you know, establishing your own company, how did you come to determine outdoor apparel was going to be what you wanted to pursue?
So from my perspective, having worked in the footwear industry for a long period of time, there were certain things that I did not like about the footwear industry, which is an incredible proliferation of SKUs. You know, people's feet are so many different sizes, right? And so, like, we have SKUs too. Don't worry. We're not a handbag company where we only make one size, which is a great business model for anyone listening. You know, if you can make one thing and it's one size fits all, especially.
It's a lot easier.
Yes. But the other thing too is that I like the outdoors. And so, you know, for lack of a better term, I have a lot of opinions on outdoor apparel. And so from my perspective, I think about where I want to spend my time. It wasn't in children's footwear. It wasn't necessarily in footwear. But I love to hike. I love to ski. You know, when the lakes are right, I like to skate on the lakes. You know what I mean? So different things like that. And that's an area where, you know, I use all of our products. Right. You know, I am the target market. I understand, at least in theory, who we're trying to target to. And so from that perspective, it was a very natural home for me.
So what is it about your products that makes them stand apart from the competition? Because there are obviously, we know, other outdoor apparel companies. What is it that makes yours that extra special?
Yeah. So if what differentiates us from the competition is why and how we what we do. And so, again, it gets back to this idea of creating a better tomorrow for the mountain communities where we're located, like Gorham and Lincoln, New Hampshire. That's critical. No other outdoor apparel company does that, right? That is not their stated mission for existence. That is not what they're doing. I don't know of another outdoor apparel company that works with some of the ski clubs or local charities that we work with, whether it's New England Disabled Sports or the Linwood Ski Team, who just won state championship, by the way. But, you know, that is what we do. We are like a hyper-local organization in the outdoor community in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. Okay. How we do it? We're the only ones who make it in the USA. There are, again, some niche, but if you look at like the big brands, we're the only ones who make our products in the USA. We're the only ones who are directly employing people in these communities. That's what differentiates us. And we like to have the discussion at that level, right? Because no one can touch us there. And we don't want to get caught in a feature battle, right? How many pockets are on your mid layer, right? That's not, you know, from an outdoor apparel perspective, that's not the battle you want to have. But if you want to go there, we can go there. And so I think, you know, our mission is different than theirs. The impact we're creating in the community is very different than theirs. And then if you look at our products, one of the things is because we make our products in the United States, you know, we pay some of the highest labor rates in the world for anybody who's making outdoor apparel. And so how do we differentiate our products? If you're one of our competitors, you already have really low costs and your material costs are really high as a percentage of your cost of goods sold. For us, they're relatively low. We use really high quality materials. Our Flume base layer, which I mentioned earlier, which has been named the overall best hiking shirt by Field & Stream, not once but twice, uses a product called Tencel. Tencel is an expensive product compared to what other people are using, but that's okay. For us, we can create a product. If you look at the reviews on our website, incredibly soft, incredibly warm, comfortable, thermoregulating, you know, naturally antibacterial, meaning odor resistant, wicks really well, dries 2 to 3 times faster than wool. We can use products like that. And so if you look at actually what we're designing for the active outdoor enthusiast who's going to be doing things, it's breathability, it's the performance of the materials. And the great thing about the outdoor apparel industry is the brands don't own the materials. We can purchase high-end materials from basically any company in the world, just like Patagonia does or the North Face does. We can access basically almost any material they can. Though they do box us out of some, to be fair, so we can't quite get them all. But we can compete on that process. You know, we can compete on that quality process. But again, we want to get back to why we're doing what we're doing, right? We are the only outdoor apparel company that is maintaining trails in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, to the best of my knowledge. We're the only ones who, you know, we had an event last night at our studio in Lincoln. We have two more this week with local nonprofits. You know, Linwood Ambulance, which is the ambulance company, you know, that services North Woodstock and Lincoln, you know, we do fundraising for them. That is a necessary thing. You know, if you're in one of these small remote towns, it's important to have the ambulance company. You know, Patagonia and North Face are not supporting Lynnwood Ambulance. We are, right? So we are very involved in our community, and that's how we're making a difference. And then, oh, by the way, we make gear that can compete with anybody else's in the world.
So you start this in Lincoln in 2019, Virgin Outdoor. Can you talk about how you got started, what that looked like, and how you were able to grow that company in that first year?
Very inefficiently. you know, we had a plan. The plan didn't quite work out. But what I think it did, and like many things in business, you know, you always just have to walk away with what you learned from the circumstance. We launched with basically three products.
How many employees?
We had, at that moment in time, we had six. So we launched, you know, three products, six employees. We couldn't find a woman to be our fit model. So we only had men's products to start, you know, so we kind of like came out of the gate, kind of like tripping over our own 2 feet. But what we learned from that process, one was, you know, where the opportunities were for us to grow. We also, the most important thing that we did is we actually proved we could make our own products, right? So I think from a, you know, a business case perspective, what we actually did prove was we could actually manufacture these products ourselves. So if you look at the first year, it's a success. There's numerous failures and shortcomings that I could talk about, but we actually learned that we could make these products ourselves. And that was really the whole premise for the company. So we had proof of concept, at least on one level. And so as I look at that year, despite the fact that we had made way too many men's base layers and things like that, you know, there's all types of things we could talk about. What we did find out, one was that we could do it, and number two, that people cared, right? So when people came in and saw what we were doing, they thought, this is really neat. And our studio, if you've never been, if you walk into our studio in Lincoln and you're on a weekday, you walk into a retail store, and there is a factory floor right next to you. So as I like to joke with people, you know, our supply chain is 20 feet long. And people walk in and they see it and then they get it. And if you are someone who is inclined to support people like us, who cares about those types of things, it really strikes a mission. So then we knew that we had something. And then it was like, you know, I need to do a much better job of managing this business, right? I've made a lot of mistakes. That's okay. I need to learn from those mistakes and then really, you know, concentrate on managing the business much better.
And that's the hard entrepreneurism. You know, I think people like to focus on, you know, they became a success and, you know, it was just always that way. When the fact is that success came at a lot of mistakes and learning from them, trial and error and such. A startup manufacturer in the competitive apparel industry, that's a tough road to hoe anyhow. And then 2020 comes and delivers the ultimate challenge for all of us, never mind someone who's just trying to get a company and brand off the ground. What was it like when the pandemic hit with you trying to build this brand in the White Mountains?
Challenging, to say the least.
How did you survive that? Because that could have killed a lot of companies.
One of the things that I think we did really well there was that we pivoted. In a way, and we really stepped into our mission. So, you know, if you go back to the premise of the company, and apologies for all you listening, because you'll hear me say it again, you know, like, why do we exist? We exist to make a better tomorrow for mountain communities like Lincoln and Gorham, where we're based. At that moment in time, the world, it's hard to remember what March 2020 was like, right?
You know, we're trying to forget about it, actually.
Yeah. But what we did was we took some of our material that we had that was going to be used for some different things like t-shirts and things like that. And we made masks and then we gave them away and we stepped into our mission. So we used to call it a mask drop. We would manufacture maybe like 500 or 600 masks. We would send out an email, put it on social media. We're going to quote unquote sell masks tonight, you know, starting at 7 o'clock. And we just give them away, free shipping, free everything. And what I think it really did was it allowed us to live our mission. And then what that did was that endeared a lot of people to support our products.
Because you ended up giving away, what, 10,000?
Over 10,000 masks. Wow. Yeah. It was about 12,000, I think, by the time the whole thing was done. But we gave them away. We gave them away to organizations, the aforementioned Lynnwood Ambulance Company. They didn't have any masks for their drivers, right? people like that. The local Meals on Wheels didn't have masks for it. Gather, who's down in Portsmouth, came to us, right? We donated, I don't know, 50 masks to Gather or something like that. That enabled them to feed thousands of people, right? And so we really leaned into our mission. We said, you know, if we're going to create a business and we're going to tell people that we're here to create a better tomorrow for these communities, we're going to step into it. And we had a lot of support from people. You know, some stuff from the federal government helped too. But all of those things, we said, we're really going to show people that we're going to walk the walk. And we're going to walk the walk at the time when it's hardest to do it, right? This is an incredible challenge. It's an incredibly challenging time. And people here, I mean, we had people calling us like, I'll buy them from you for, you know, I'll buy a mask for $50 from you. And we said, we're not going to sell them. We're going to give them away to the people who need them. We didn't want it to be where, you know, someone who lives on a fixed income somewhere couldn't get a mask. And that's what we did. And that gave us a huge following. People really appreciated it. I think they actually believed, you know, when we tell them this is why we exist, I think they actually believed it. And I think it gave us a tremendous amount of credibility. And we've tried to harness and, you know, reap the seeds of that ever since.
And from there, you not only survived, but you've been thriving and you grew. Can you talk about how and when you moved into Gorham and what that did for the business?
Sure. The Gorham acquisition, acquisition being used lightly, there was another company, actually a great New Hampshire company when it started, called Wild Things Gear, that was closing their production facility in Gorham. We heard about it through, I forget, somebody came into our shop and said, hey, I heard Wild Things is closing. So I went up and I knocked on the door and it turned out they were. And what we ended up doing was leasing the building, purchasing some of the equipment from them that they were going to leave behind. And then we retained basically 50% of their staff. And what that really did for us was it allowed us to just kind of jump ahead in terms of a company that like accelerated our growth by, you know, I don't know, 18, 24 months. Why? If you're not familiar with Wild Things Gear, it's a great New Hampshire story, or at least it was at one point in time. Now, I guess it's more of a different story. But they make highly technical apparel, a lot of the stuff for the U.S. military. So it was a Gore-certified factory. They had an incredible staff of people who worked there, very talented people, like, including the ones we were able to retain. And it gave us the ability to really push on the technical side of those things. So now I don't know of another consumer-oriented company that makes their own, for instance, waterproof jacket in the United States. They might be out there. There's a couple people I know who stopped. But we do, and we make it in Gorham, New Hampshire, and it's a great jacket. It's our Tuckerman hard shell. But, you know, we now have technical capabilities that probably would have taken us 3 or 4 years to develop if we had done it organically. It also expanded our production capacity, just period, because we were able to hire, you know, more people.
Right.
So that helped. And we have a great team in Gorham. We have a great team in Lincoln too, but our team in Gorham does great work. I mean, I think their average number of sewing years experience is close to 20.
Yeah. You were able to pick up a skilled workforce.
Exactly. And that has made a tremendous advantage for us. And it allows us to do some different things. The other thing, by having a slightly larger workforce and with that type of skill, you know, we can innovate faster than others. You know, we can have them make a prototype for us. We can fit test it over a week, and then we can make some changes, have them make another one for us. You know, we can literally go through 2 or 3 product iterations in a month. And so having a really talented team like we have, it has, you know, I think sets the groundwork for us to create a tremendous competitive advantage in terms of product innovation, time to market, and things like that going forward. So we're very excited about it.
Well, this interview has been flying by, but we do have to unfortunately wrap up. I just want to end on one quick question, which is, so what's the future? What are you trying to build here?
Yeah. I'm going to break that into 3 parts. So what we're trying to establish right now is that Burgeon Outdoor is New Hampshire's outdoor brand, right? So if you're going to buy outdoor apparel, this is who we are. Then we want to become New England's outdoor brand. And then we want to become the premier aspirational outdoor apparel company in the world.
Just some small goals.
Yeah. What I mean by the last one is, you know, we're not trying to become like some, you know, we're not, doesn't mean the largest, that doesn't mean whatever. We're just saying that if you believe in the values we have, right, where, you know, your money is going to do good in the communities where you recreate and for the people who live there and make your product, that you are going to come to us and say, if I need that new product, I hope Bergen makes it. I'm going to check there first. That's what we mean by the last definition. It doesn't mean we're going to sell $10,000 jackets, you know, like some high-end, you know, European ski company, which is probably a great business, just not one we know that much about. But that's what we're trying to create. We're trying to create that people, for people who value what we do, for the impact that we make in our communities and who want great outdoor apparel, that we are their brand of choice.
Excellent. Well, Rudy, thank you again for joining us. Rudy Glocker is the founder of Bergen Outdoor in Lincoln and Gorham. We appreciate you speaking with us. And if anybody's interested in meeting Rudy or his team or is checking out their apparel, learning more about their mission, again, you'll be able to find them at the Made in New Hampshire Expo on April 5th, 6th, and 7th at the DoubleTree in Manchester. Thank you again, Rudy, for joining us.
Thank you so much, Christine. Thank you so much, Matt. It's been great being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed the stories and information you heard on today's podcast, find more by subscribing to Business NH Magazine or visiting businessnhmagazine.com. I'm Matt Mowry.
And I'm Christine Kerrigan. BizCast NH is a production of Granite Media Group.